Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. That was a very fun 3 or 4 minutes. As of the end of Ray's newscast, we didn't really have a panel, and now we do, and I couldn't be more thrilled. Let me introduce everyone who is on the line, and thank you for bearing with us for a few moments. I appreciate it. Also, a reminder, you can always join in on the fun, and who wouldn't want to be a part of this fun? Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. All right, here we go. WAMC's Alan Chartok, you're in the house. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am, and I'm delighted to be here. As usual, well, when you say how am I, we're engaged here in Great Barrington in the Great Rooster War.
Oh, the Rooster War.
Yeah, whether people should be allowed with less than 5 acres to have a rooster.
Oh, we have that. We have that debate in our town a couple years ago. Yeah,
well, it's back again. You may remember the Linda Norris Auditorium. Well, Linda Norris had a rooster, and the rooster control officer, RCO, came and told her she had to give it up.
Yeah,
I don't know if there really is an RCO, but I made up that name. and now we're signing a petition. Those of us who love hearing the rooster crowing in the morning, we're signing a petition, hoping to get a law on the books that says you may have a rooster.
You know, nature, whether it be an owl or a pileated woodpecker, I mean, they make noise, and that's, you know, yes, I understand that you bring the rooster onto your property, but still, you know, that's, roosters do what roosters do.
Many of the same people who complained about the wonderful train whistle, which is so comforting to many of us,
there you go,
are also anti-rooster. So what can I say? The lines are being drawn.
There was a big controversy in our town over the ice cream man who had this really annoying, and I will admit it was a really annoying song that would play. And you could hear it for 2 hours at top volume. Many people complained about that, too. But we'll figure all this out. There's certainly bigger issues to worry about.
And, yes, there are.
And we'll hit on many of them today. Let me also welcome Times Union columnist Chris Churchill. Good morning, Chris. How are you? Hello. I may have to press
Rooster.
A button. Hello. Hello, Chris. We didn't hear what you said. Go ahead. Say it again.
Oh, I was just saying I'm very much pro-rooster.
Yeah, so I just, absolutely.
You know, on that controversial topic, I'm taking a stand.
As you should. Investigative reporter, UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Uh-oh.
Good morning. And in the rare moment of solidarity, I agree with Chris and with Alan. I think the rooster stays.
Yes. I'm with you. We're all pro-rooster here. And this is absolutely true, but as of about 5 minutes ago, Mike Spain didn't know he was going to be on our radio program, but we had a very last-minute cancellation, and I called up Mike, and because he's terrific, jumped on the app and is with us this morning. He is the former associate editor of the Times Union, and Mike, it's a thrill to have you back. Thank you.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm calling from Schenectady, where roosters are not allowed, but very annoying ice cream trucks are allowed, and they blather all day long with the same song.
Over and over again. And there's a little part of that song where it goes, na 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 na, and then it goes, hello, and my God, is that annoying.
And I always say, goodbye.
Yeah.
And you will remember, Joe, because we have his paintings, so his drawings all around, that was one of Pete's favorite songs. I have a rooster. My rooster loves me. I feed him by the greenberry tree.
See, it's all coming full circle. Well, thank you all. I appreciate it's days like this. I appreciate all of you so much for being a part of our program coming on and being with us. So let us begin with the big news of the day. I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. Who is Joe Biden going to pick? And we've been talking about it over the last week. Is it going to be Kamala Harris? Is it going to be Susan Rice? And yesterday afternoon, Joe Biden announced that Senator Kamala Harris will be his running mate. This is a historic decision on many levels. It's the first black woman and the first Asian American woman to run for vice president on a major party ticket at a moment when the country is grappling with its racial past and future. Biden's announcement, made in a text and a tweet, aligns him with a former presidential rival whose most electric campaign performance came when she criticized his record on school integration during a debate. The decision is the most consequential of Biden's presidential campaign and has major implications not only for the November elections, but for the future of the Democratic Party. Biden, who is 78 years old, by inauguration day, would be the oldest president ever and has said he considers himself a transition candidate. The choice places Harris, who was a more vibrant and energetic presence on the campaign trail, but was also at times unsteady, at the forefront of the party's future as potentially the first female vice president. Alan?
I defer to Rosemary, who I really think has had a pretty good understanding of how all of this goes. Rosemary?
Oh, thank you, Alan. I'm delighted. I liked her as a candidate. I love her as a senator. I think this was a smart choice by Biden. She is a whip smart campaigner and debater. She is attractive to a lot of demographics that Biden must secure. I think he really, truly would have alienated blacks and especially black women had he not picked a woman of color. And I say this as an ardent Warren supporter. I think that the fact that she was a rival adds to the allure of this, because Biden, if he wins, would be taking over a country badly in need of shoring up divisions and working together, even with people with whom you disagree. I think that Trump's reaction yesterday, did any of you see that?
He spoke
about the selection at his presser. Nasty and just sputtering, you know, like, oh, she's mean. Oh, she's just the worst. And it was just like high schoolish, less than that, junior high schoolish. Shows that she was a good pick. I appreciate that Elizabeth Warren wrote a very gracious congratulations to her, and I hope like hell that Biden is working with many of his other rivals, male and female, in that Democratic primary to get them involved in his administration should he beat Trump. And I really want him to beat Trump. On the other hand, I'm sitting here this morning. I was hoping I would go a little bit later because I have a friend very, very knowledgeable about politics in the Middle East. He's Jordanian. And he just wrote to me this morning that the selection was BS and now he hopes Trump wins again. I have no idea where that's coming from.
Huh. Well, yeah, we want you. Can you text during the breaks? We want to know about that.
I've been texting him. Quick, get back to me on this. He did not like Hillary, so misogyny is the first thing I leap to, but it's probably more complicated than that. So I'm anxious to hear what others of you say about her negatives. There are negatives about Kamala Harris. I don't think her prosecutor's record is one of them. Dan said it best yesterday. If you are a member of a minority group and you take on an establishment job, as she did as a prosecutor, you are going to end up taking positions that seem to go against what you should as a minority, and yet you have to uphold your standards and your principles. And I hope that she is going to be able to prove that that's exactly what she did.
You know,
that's what I have to say this morning. I'm very happy about this choice.
Just real quick on the rivals. You know, I saw the on social media, on Instagram and on Twitter and Facebook that Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, Pete Buttigieg, Cory Booker were all just, you know, over the moon about this choice and said they couldn't all wait to be out in the campaign trail where they're. So hopefully that is, as you said, is part of the equation.
And Alan, one other thing really, really quickly, and that is maybe overlooked here. There's the whole thing about a black woman. I think that's just wonderful and I think it's appropriate. But she's also the child of immigrants.
Yes.
And I think with Trump, with his anti-immigration standards, the lines are drawn now because of this. And I think it's an added asset which doesn't get enough attention.
Absolutely. Chris Churchill.
I think she's an okay pick. I'm not as enthusiastic as Rosemary, but it's a pick that makes a lot of sense for Biden. I can see why he did it. I mean, it seems a little bit weird to describe the first, woman of color to be on a national ticket as kind of a safe pick, but in a lot of ways she does seem to be that. I think I probably would have, if I had been Biden, I would have gone with probably Val Demings or somebody who was from a swing state, somebody who maybe would bring a few more voters to the fold. I think the real cautionary note is, that Harris did really poorly during the presidential primary. Came in with very high expectations and really fell flat. Whether or not that'll matter as a vice president, I'm not really sure, because, she's playing second fiddle. It's a different role. And this is going to be a very unusual campaign anyways. We may not see very much of the vice president. So while I can't really object to the pick, I do object to her prosecutor, her record as a prosecutor, though. I differ with Rosemary on that one. The left is not going to be happy, or elements of the left are not going to be happy.
Well, they would.
And that could be a problem for Biden. I mean, Hillary lost in part because the Bernie supporters didn't show up, and it's an open question whether they'll show up this time. And I don't think Harris's pick helps much in that regard. So I don't know. It's kind of a safe pick.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, Chris, I agree. It's a safe pick. It would have been nice if Biden was able to find somebody who fit all the other criteria and had maybe background as a governor. It's just I'm disappointed to see two U.S. senators who don't have that executive experience run. But having said that, I think it'll be a very strong ticket. And although Trump is immediately portraying it as a radical left ticket, it really isn't. And the very concerns you have about Kamala Harris as a prosecutor and her not being embraced by the liberals will probably mitigate Trump's own complaints that she's a radical left candidate. It's good in many, many ways to have somebody, I agree with Rosemary, somebody who was your rival now coming together in unity. I mean, the symbolism of it is very important. And if they're able to really get a good chemistry, and it's not just some, shotgun marriage like Kennedy Johnson, I think it might be very, very good for the country, because it'll bring others on board, maybe some of the same other names that you mentioned, Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, et cetera.
When you, Alan, did you want to add anything?
Well, yeah, I would have been very angry had he not named her. First of all, you can name other people who are out there, but they didn't have her visibility. Let's just try to remember that Biden won his nomination because he was a moderate, not because he was a lefty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think the fact that she's not cements that relationship. The American people want to be safe. And the fact that she was a prosecutor, there will be people who hold it against her that she was a prosecutor and that she did this or that. But in fact, that was a job, and I have a feeling that's going to be an asset, not a detriment. Now, there are always a couple of people who are very loud in their objections one way or another, many of whom announced that they did not vote in the last election. And you see what they got, period.
I was noting that a year ago, in June of 2019, after the first debate, the first Democratic debate, on this panel, we were saying that it could very well be Biden and Harris. And here we are. It's Biden and Harris. Now, obviously, we've gone through a lot of hoops from then to now. But it was sort of the conventional thought a long time ago that this would be what happened, and that it is indeed what happened. Rosemary?
Yeah, I think it goes back to Alan Alan summed it up. After Trump, after chaos, after embarrassment, after ongoing stupidity, the idea of a steady, moderate, stay the course administration has got to be appealing. I hope they can sell it that way. I look at the primaries yesterday. How nuts is it? We end up with the first Muslim congresswoman got back in despite a highly controversial first term. And then in Georgia, we have Marjorie Greene,
yep,
who's a QAnon wacko, and she gets in. I mean, this is a very weird country right now. And I think that going right down the middle and keeping everybody hanging in while you're kind of restoring some of the order that we've lost in the past 4 years and solidifying traditions that have really dissolved under Trump. I think that's super important, and I hope that there'll be a lot of other Democrats especially who will think that and vote for it, and also purple people, as Alan calls them, who will see it that way.
Walla walla bing bang.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk about this a lot more when we come back. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We will continue our conversation again. It's panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to be part of the conversation, just keep your letter short and to the point. That's all we ask. We'll be right back after this. Do any of you read the New Yorker magazine and look at one of the cartoons every once in a while and say, okay, I just don't get it? Does that happen to anybody? Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
so David writes to us and said, this morning's Rooster Talk has revealed the panel's true colors. Support for that red-faced, testosterone-fueled early morning tirade proves definitively that the progressives are right. You are all in the pot for Trump.
Oh, my God.
All right.
I think it's a joke, but I
Well, that's, you know, like a cartoon. Yeah, I just don't quite get it. Yeah.
When I do that, I always try to say sarcasm alert.
Yes.
Those who might not understand you.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't even joke about being a Trump supporter. I have lost my sense of humor.
You make a point.
All right. So, good morning, panel, and greetings from Austin, Texas, says this listener writer. Their name is Pat. The comments on Senator Sanders' Facebook endorsement for Kamala Harris this morning were 95% negative, mainly because of her record as a prosecutor. It appears that once again, Bernie supporters will not be voting, even if a no vote is a vote for Trump. I'm an 80-year-old great-grandmother with Parkinson's disease, willing to stand in line for however long it takes to cast my ballot for a blue ticket. Please, panel, Dr. Chartok, can you offer me any hope that our country will be free of Trump and his Republican Party in 2021? I'm worried, I'm scared, I'm frightened for my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, my country.
All appropriate questions. Since the question was addressed to me, I've been saying all along that that Biden is going to wipe out Trump in this election. He's 10 points ahead in the national polls. But if anybody rests on those laurels or is confident about that, it would be wrong. As for the Bernie thing, you know, I just want to say one thing. You know, question mark.
Rosemary, is there anything you would like to say about on that subject?
I hope that's not true. I do think
I'm looking it up now,
voters,
but go ahead.
Yeah, I do think that young voters, and, you know, I'll let our listeners dispute what's a millennial and what's a Gen Xer and all that. But young voters, people in their 20s and early 30s, going to the polls is always a problem. And it will be so this time. I don't think Kamala Harris adds to that. There's nothing about her that speaks to this group of people. And they only vote when they're personally engaged, it would seem. It has to be about them, for them, discussion among them. And I think that is a huge problem for Democrats. And, yeah, the danger is not that they'll vote Republican, but that they won't vote at all. And Democrats do need to get out the vote. I think Alan is overly optimistic. I'd love to believe him, but I don't, that this is a landslide in the making for Biden. Just don't.
So Bernie Sanders tweeted 16 hours ago, congratulations to Kamala Harris, who will make history as our next vice president. She understands what it takes to stand up for working people, fight for health care for all, and take down the most corrupt administration in history. Let's get to work and win. I think what the writer may have been referring to is there is a couple of articles going around, mostly on right-wing media, of saying that Bernie supporters and progressives are trashing the Biden-Harris ticket.
Go ahead, please.
Some of them are, but you're always going to get. I mean, one of the problems with this pick is that there was just too much writing on it, right? I mean, somebody was going to be left unhappy. I mean, first of all, this pick has more significance because of Biden's age. And there's this notion that he is essentially picking the next nominee, or, you know, picking the first woman president. And at a certain point, it becomes almost impossible for Biden to make the pick. I mean, you know what I mean? You're not going to satisfy everybody.
Right.
I mean, one of the problems I do think that Harris has is that it isn't exactly clear what she believes. She isn't, and maybe for Biden that was a positive, because it doesn't give Trump a lot of ammunition. But, you know, she's somebody who, is she a moderate? Is she on the left? During the campaign, she was for Medicare for all, and then suddenly she wasn't for Medicare for all. So, you know, in a sense, she's not someone who is going to, I don't think she's going to win over a lot of people on the left. I'm not sure she'll win over a lot of people in the middle, but she doesn't do a lot of harm either, if that makes any sense.
Look, I don't think there's a lot of winning over to be done at all in this election. I think most people, especially those who are going to vote, are already set in their ways. I think all this talk of independents and purple people is especially exaggerated in this election.
Yeah. Well, it's a Biden versus Trump race. You know, we can argue about, you know, maybe the vice president makes a little bit of a difference here on the margins, but essentially it's the Biden versus, and most people know where they stand on that divide at this point.
Well, I got to say that I think that a big question, because of Biden's age and my age, I'm older, you know, is that she was that she could be president. In the end, people have a confidence that this is a strong woman who could be president of the United States. And to me, that's why the pick is brilliant.
Back to the mail. Donna says, interesting how two men on the panel see Kamala Harris as a safe pick. Let's face it, anytime you pick a person who is not white and male, it's not a safe pick. Just picking a woman is not a safe pick, let alone a woman of Jamaican East Indian descent who is assertive and ambitious.
And from California, too. Yeah, I agree with this. It's odd that we're calling it a safe pick, because it's historic, and so therefore it is not safe. It's unusual. But among all of the wonderful field of candidates that he worked with, who would have been the safe pick?
Right.
Who would you have said, this is out of the ballpark? Wow, who would have thought it could be this person?
She's safe relative to Karen Bass, or relative to Val Demings, or relative to Elizabeth Warren. I mean, she's safe in that she's been somewhat vetted before. She's run for a national office. She's safe in that, unlike Elizabeth Warren, she's not going to offend a lot of donors. I mean, let's be honest, Elizabeth Warren was never going to be the choice, because Elizabeth Warren worries Wall Street too much, right? So she's safe in a lot of... maybe she's not safe compared to Amy Klobuchar or you know, Gretchen Whitmer, but she was safe compared to the other people that Biden was said to be considering really seriously.
Any woman pick is dangerous, and we saw this. I'm sorry to bring this up again. I said I wouldn't, but we saw it with Hillary, who was the most experienced, most traveled, most connected candidate we have ever had, possibly in the history of the Republic, and she was offensive to so many. I mean, like, irrationally offensive. So women, just picking a woman which I don't like Joe Biden because of Anita Hill. I still carry that against him. But I have forgiven him somewhat because of this. He said he was going to pick a woman, and under pressure not to do that, not to keep that promise, he did, and he has a great candidate.
Mike?
Yeah, no, it's relatively safe. Having said already he was going to pick a woman, and having the pressure on him to pick a woman of color, this is a safe bet. She's well known. She's popular. People know her more than they don't know her. I think Susan Rice would have been obscure. I don't know how many people really know Val Demings and some of the others. And Kamala Harris, I think, generally speaking, of all the people in the mix, fit the criteria as being the least controversial. Everything about her is known. She's been properly vetted.
Right.
And the fact, as you said, Rosemary, the fact that she was a rival and disagreed with Biden so effectively during one of the debates makes her desirable for people who might have a little bit of a problem with Biden. She'll be there to express her opinion when Biden is making decisions, if she has the kind of relationship, and he claims he wants that, the kind of relationship he had when he was vice president with Obama.
Frank writes, are you kidding? The Harris pick for VP is a threefer, black, Asian, and female. Safe pick. Are you kidding? This is a daring and smart pick, perfect balance with Joe Biden.
I just want to say, do you remember when Barack Obama, the obscure Barack Obama, couldn't win because he was a black man? You know, I mean, but this country is moving on. This country is doing great things now. And so, you know, I think it's extraordinary that he's done this and done it so well with such fortitude.
You know, it's a good point. And I was thinking of this as Chris was talking at the beginning about, you know, of having a senator and of Senator Harris and having trouble with her own campaign. But Barack Obama picked Joe Biden. Joe Biden had run, what, two times at that point or three times had lost. And he picked him and it turned out quite well. I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily that you should be judged by how you do in the primaries.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the circumstances are a little bit different, but I do generally agree that, you know, it's running for being the vice president is different than being the candidate. I mean, she doesn't have to, like I said before, she had seemed to have trouble making up her mind about Medicaid for All. Well,
yeah.
Now she's expected to kind of adopt Biden's position, so she's not under those same pressures. You know, the caveat though is that she didn't attract. I mean, if she's on the ticket in part because she's going to appeal to black voters, there's really no evidence that she did that during the primary, right? I mean, she actually didn't at all. You know, and she dropped out in part because she was polling fourth or fifth in her own state. I mean, it wasn't just that she did poorly. She did. I mean, it was just kind of one of the worst campaigns
in the field, I feel. No candidate attracted black voters except for Biden. And he's already part of the team.
Well,
that's not fair.
That's,
there's some criticism against her because her black credentials are not black enough in that race. She's West Indian, not brought over from Africa and slave things. That's awful as part of the racism of this country. But Biden doesn't need that from her. His promise was to pick a woman.
Right.
Black women who supported him asked for a woman of color. He has given them that. And as for her not having her own strong philosophy, political philosophy, isn't that a good thing in a vice president, which Biden would know? A vice president is not a policy maker so much as a policy enabler.
That's why I said that Biden may see her as a strength. I may see that as a strength
because it doesn't give,
unlike Elizabeth Warren, who would have given Trump plenty of material. She doesn't really do that. But at the same time, the fact that it's really hard to pin her down on policy explains a little bit why people on the left don't trust her, because they're not sure where she stands on the issues that they care about most, you know. And to go back to black voters, it's a little bit more complicated than that. I mean, Biden did very well with older black voters, but according to polls, younger black voters were for Elizabeth Warren and for Bernie, and Hispanic voters are overwhelmingly for Bernie. So, you know, there isn't a track record there of Kamala Harris appealing to voters of color. Now, that obviously could change. I mean, the primary is the primary.
You oversimplify that, Chris, because the black voters who vote, in other words, the ones who really matter, were the older and mostly women voters who came out in force for Joe Biden. They're the only demographic mm-hmm. who came out in majority for Hillary, for example. They did not go to Trump or stay home. So, yeah, you can be a young black voter who likes Bernie, but like many of the Bernie supporters, I know, here come the letters, they do not vote. They rally. And you can't even rally these days.
All right. We're going to take a break.
And part of the...
Well, go ahead, Chris. Finish your thought, and then we'll go to
break. I was going to say, part of the calculation may be, even if she doesn't, bring black voters to the polls, part of the calculation might have also been that if the ticket had been two white people, it might have depressed the black vote. Right. So, you know,
absolutely.
So even if she isn't bringing people to the polls, at least people aren't angry by the pick.
We're going to take a break. We have a ton of letters, so I want to get to those. A lot of people weighing in on this, and I want to get to as many as we possibly can before the top of the hour and our break. So we're going to go to a break now, and we'll be back and go to your letters right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We have lots of letters. Let's get to them. Earl says, great pick on so many levels. I can't wait to hear Republicans comment going forward. Boy, they will have to pick their way through that minefield. Good. To paraphrase, we shall know them by their words. We got this from Bernard, who said, what do you think Trump supporters think of Biden's choice? Anyone on that? Mike?
They don't like women. They don't like minorities. I think they think this is, they're buying into his idea that she's some kind of radical extremist. You know, what do you think? They like Pence. Give me a break. They like QAnon conspirators.
Mike?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it does help rally. It may help rally some people who are more complacent, who are supporters of Trump, because he may effectively, even though she is a moderate, we've talked about that, she's a law and order reputation, which can be offensive to many people, especially people who are more criminally justice enlightened. And still, she'll probably effectively be portrayed as a radical to the Trump supporters, because first of all, just as Rosemary said, she's a woman and she's black. They're not familiar with those people telling them, you know, leading them and being the candidates on the ticket.
Christina writes, there's a lot of discussion already in the Twitterverse that Harris was chosen because of her race and gender, as if every single white male chosen previously wasn't chosen for the exact same reason. The double standard exists. We go to Jude, who says, as a 24-year-old who voted for Hillary in the last election, you can be damn sure I'm voting for Biden this year. If he had picked a 45-year-old rooster as his running mate, I'd still vote for him. This should be a no-brainer at this point for everyone and anyone.
That's great. Great letter.
We go to...
Can I just say that a 45-year-old rooster would be better than Mike Pence? Can I just throw that in?
Hey, I'm wondering...
Wouldn't a 45-year-old rooster be a bit of a medical miracle?
I don't know. How long do roosters live? 45 years. Alan, ask your neighbor.
Rooster years. I mean, that would be an impressive rooster I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
good point.
I was wondering who you think the Republicans would have liked Joe Biden to pick.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, who would have been the easiest to, Elizabeth Warren, perhaps? I don't know.
By the way,
Bernie Sanders.
Or Karen, I think they were licking their lips a little bit at Karen Bass with some of the Cuba stuff, and I think they would. Elizabeth Warren, I think a lot of them saw some opportunity there, but I also feel like that one might have backfired a little bit. You know, the one thing that we haven't talked about much is that the economy is in total collapse, right? And Elizabeth Warren is one person who can really speak to that. And maybe she will on the campaign trail as a Biden surrogate. But, you know, she really has economic chops, and she's a real economic populist. And there's an economic populism rising on the right, too. And she, you know, that may have appealed to some people on the right and in the middle. I mean, the downside, as I said before, is that big donors do not respond to that. So, and that's probably why she's one of the reasons why she's not on the ticket.
If you believe, as I do, that this election is all about race, this is, and I've said it from the very beginning, that the Republicans do not want to see somebodies of color or tan or black taking over the politics of this country, then you know why she is such a dangerous candidate in their minds for this job.
I have to say, one of my great fears is that someday I'll just be zapped and someone will look at my search history in my computer and see that I search things like, what is the lifespan of a rooster? The answer... the answer
what
to... 5 to 8 years. Five to 8 years.
Yeah.
But we're talking
about
rooster.
45-year-old rooster is really something. I mean,
in rooster years,
well, let's give it some credit. Yeah.
Sort of like Joe Biden of roosters.
They've got a lot of work to do in those 8 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's go back to the letters. We got this from Kathleen, who says, differences with Hillary. We recently saw AOC deal with misogyny very gracefully, effectively. AOC is a role model. Kamala is as close to this as it gets among the top tier of picks. Hillary didn't have that skill or the mindset. Warren reacts too much, same generation as Hillary. Kamala has it. She, like AOC, grew up tough and beautiful. On the 100th anniversary of women getting the vote this month, the feminist undercurrent is strong and often undercover. Biden picked very well. We contain multitudes. Women get this intuitively. We are in for some very big changes beyond what we can imagine.
Oh,
yep.
Nice letter.
Yep.
Donna says, regarding concern about the young adult vote, it is time for AOC to unleash her massive following for Biden and Harris. Yeah, what position does this put her in, do you think?
Don't know.
What will she do?
I don't know. I don't know either.
She's not been a unifying force up to now, has she?
We're talking about Hillary?
No, we're talking about AOC.
No, we're talking about AOC. She's been pushing the progressive line, which, okay, I have respect for that, but is it not now time to get Trump
unite?
Out of office?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is puzzling, the idea that even those people on the left of the left don't understand how bad off this country would be with another 4 years of Trump. It's just amazing to me. And go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to ask, you don't think by November there'll be some kind of a joint campaign appearance of Joe Biden and Ocasio-Cortez? I mean, it just seems like it's inevitable.
Yeah, I think there probably will be, unless they decide that she's more off-putting to moderates than the benefits. Mm. The risks outweigh the benefits. Mm. But
right.
You know, this notion that that young voters or progressive voters are just going to follow whoever AOC endorses or whoever Bernie endorses, I think is a little bit misplaced. I think mostly they're looking for policy proposals that they agree with. I mean, they're not dumb. They're not just
right.
From their point of view, Trump should be worse, 100% worse. But on the other hand, I think they want to see concrete things. And I think one of the mistakes that Hillary made was that she was just, first of all, didn't reach out to them, but also at times was really condescending toward people on the progressive left, describing what they wanted as pipe dreams and stuff. And Biden has been better than that so far, and I think he will continue to be. But, you know, it's about reaching out. It's about building a coalition, and that's what successful campaigns do.
In the 88 days that we have until Election Day, which is going to be a really long 88 days, I think we can all agree on that, And I find myself doing this too. You know, we talk about what it's going to be like on the campaign trail and what's this person going to do when that person. Well, we're not going to have a campaign trail. This is all weird. We're going to have a bunch of Zoom meetings and people virtual. I mean, even today, the announcement, the official announcement, normally there would be thousands of people there cheering them on, Biden and Harris, and that's not going to happen. And that's all weird.
It is going to be unusual. And I think that's one of the reasons people thought that Biden might pick somebody like Susan Rice, who I think in a normal election year really wouldn't have had a chance because she's never been on, you know, run a national, been part of a national campaign before. But this year, you know, we may only see the vice presidential candidate 4 or 5 times. You know, she's going to give a speech at the convention. She'll be at the debate.
But they already
she's not going to be giving big speeches at rallies the way that we're normally accustomed to.
Mike? Yeah, but now you got CNN and MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, and my big guess is you're going to see her all over the place because she's going to prove to be a tremendous asset. So yeah, I don't think you'll see her four.
That's true. You'll see.
You'll see her 4 or 5 times. I think you're going to see a lot of her.
Well, we'll see. I mean, one of the things that people worry about with Harris is that she can be a little bit gaffe prone, but so can Biden, obviously. We'll see what the Biden campaign does. It's possible they may want to play this thing. They may look at the polls and say, we're going to play this as safe as possible, which I think actually would be a mistake. But they may decide we're going to play it as safe as possible, and we're not going to do a lot of interviews. And we are going to try to, you know, only put our candidates in very controlled situations. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that would be a mistake to play it safe. I think what they need to do is offer an alternative and be specific about what they would do. If they just try to let Trump bury himself by his stupid comments or his crazy tweets and all the things that are going wrong, that will end up backfiring on them. They need to offer an alternative where I think they're not going to get the turnout that they need to bring a victory.
So when you start thinking, Mike, about things, policy things, assuming that the earlier remarks are that the kids are the younger people are interested in policy, one policy that keeps jumping into my mind is these awful loans that young people have taken to get through college. And my bet is I'll bet anything that by the time this campaign is over, Joe Biden will talk about relief.
Hmm.
It would be appropriate. I mean, it is just a horribly unjust situation where you have parents sending their kids off to college before they even have paid off their own college loans. It's incredible, and how the banking laws exempt student loans from personal bankruptcy, so people could be completely wiped out, and they still owe the thousands and tens of thousands of dollars to the bank because they were in the form of student loans. It's really usury. And if he offered some kind of relief on that, Obama tried it, you know, and it kind of got waylaid. It didn't get implemented very well. If Biden could do that, I think it would really appeal to that middle class demographic and makes a lot of sense.
All right,
I just want to say very quickly, especially if the Senate goes the Democratic, the chances of it happening this time are very good.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We still have letters to get through, and then we'll move on to other topics as well. Our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We do have a lot of mail on the pick. I'll go to a few more letters here before we move on to some other topics. We got this from Frank, who says, want to really energize the Democratic base, flip the ticket at the convention. Russ,
ah,
Russ says, I see Kamala Harris adding no votes to the Biden campaign. She's a bi-coastal Democrat, adding no new votes there. Her views on policing and justice are just strident enough to put off seniors, and her record on criminal justice is a problem for young reformers. Her record in the Senate is otherwise unremarkable, but the election won't be about the vice presidential nominee anyway.
No, her Senate record is not unremarkable. If you've never seen a congressional hearing where she is interrogating people, you have missed something. She was awesome against Barr. She was awesome in the last Supreme Court justice hearings. She is, again, she's incredibly smart. I mean, it's just, there's an advantage to having smart people in office. Have we not learned the lesson of George W. and Trump yet? Put in a smart person.
Yeah.
It's a tentative, but yeah.
I'm digesting it. Yeah, you're right.
Well, there's always the worry that if she's too smart, she might overshadow the head of the ticket, and how they're going to fit her into the campaign, and the weirdness of this campaign and how it's being conducted. You know, those are yet to be rolled out, but it's going to be very interesting, and I can't even predict how it'll be.
You know, largely
will
missed.
Overshadow Biden, if that's not the definition of misogyny in this country. Women are quite experienced in America at how not to outshine the boys. I think she'll do fine on that. And yes, this is wild sarcasm in my voice.
You know, the Kavanaugh.
I don't think it's.
Let me just finish this one thought.
Let's do Alan and then Chris. Go ahead.
Okay, very quickly. I was very interested in the Trump tweet about Harris. One of the things that he said was she was bad about Kavanaugh, and I won't forget it. I won't forget it. That was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that'll be a motivator. I mean, that's an attempt to motivate the right. Yeah.
Yeah, but still, you know, there's the old Trump, get even, get mean stuff.
Yeah, it's almost like he's nasty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a very funny joke.
It's also so anti-woman. You know, it's like conjuring up the mean mother disciplining and saying nasty things. It's so sexist that it's hard for me to cope with it. When I heard that press conference yesterday where he was going on in the same manner of his tweet, it was just like, oh, my God, that makes me like her just for that, because Trump is going after her in this. If he were going after her policies or her thoughts, that would be one thing. But it's that she was mean. She was nasty. Give me a break, please.
And
She offers Trump. I mean, her selection offers Trump an advantage with not college educated, middle class white men. He basically, the fear of a very smart, articulate woman of color from California being in the White House is enough to motivate that group. Yeah. And that'll be the group that comes out in force.
Chris?
Oh, I was going to say two things. First, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily misogynistic to not want the VP to overshadow the candidate. I mean, that's a calculation that's often made in these choices. I mean, there's plenty of examples. If partly that's just the ego of a politician not wanting to be outshone by somebody else. But the other thing that is interesting about Harris and I think Rosemary touched on this a little bit, is that, and this blew me away, actually. She's the first person on a Democratic ticket who's from west of Colorado. The first Western candidate ever.
Wow.
Which is hard to believe.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. That's interesting.
And she does balance the ticket nicely just in a purely I know that California isn't exactly a state that Democrats have to worry about, but, you know, having a Westerner on the ticket is probably a good idea.
By the way, I've heard back from my Jordanian friend, whose opposition to Harris is that she is as bad as Trump and Nikki Haley on the question of support for Israel. He is Palestinian. And I said, God, I didn't even know her position on Palestine. And whatever it is, it's now whatever Joe Biden thinks about Israel that matters.
Mm.
Interesting.
It is. Let's go back to the letters. We go to Robert, who says the choice of Kamala Harris for VP is not a surprise. She is a historic, practical choice. Not only can she take on Pence, that's something you were saying you couldn't wait to see yesterday, Rosemary.
Oh, October 9th. October 9th, I cannot wait for that debate.
You know, there's some thinking that Trump, seeing that coming, seeing himself 10 points behind in the national polls, may want to get rid of him. I don't think so. I don't think he can afford it because of the evangelicals. But, he's going to be a desperate man.
He voiced support for him at his
I think if Nikki Haley had agreed, had been willing to be on the ticket, Pence would have been dumped months ago. I just don't think Nikki Haley wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And understandably, smart. Why would you get on that sinking ship?
Smart.
Sinking ship, yeah.
I don't think I finished that letter, but I don't remember where I was. Maybe we'll come back to it. We go to Kim, who says AOC has a speaking slot at the convention. Clearly, the campaign had no plan to run from her. Bill says the most important thing at this moment is Harris's ability to help Biden stop the COVID-19 virus and to get the country and our economy up off the mat. Go ahead.
That's a good point. I think that they're going to have to articulate a very solid national approach to combating the coronavirus, not just a vaccination, Manhattan Project for the vaccination or anything like that, but a real program to support states and to support testing and to support treatments and to support programs that'll mitigate the economic devastation. I mean, they need to state that, and they need to present that as a vision. And if they don't do that, I mean, then it's just like going from one wobbly thing to another.
What about Fauci? You know, when I asked Cuomo about Fauci, he said he'd move heaven and earth to get him to work for him if he was fired, by the president. But maybe there's a way you could use Fauci in a campaign like this, maybe announce he would be the Surgeon General, the head of this or that. It's a possibility.
Yeah, I'll bet they don't, that Anthony Fauci does not get partisan that way. I think that would undermine his whole career, which has been able to navigate Democratic and administrations and be very effective.
Mikey wouldn't have to. They have to do is they say it. You know, he sits where he is.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if they embrace his credibility without him saying anything, I think you're right. It'll help them.
Here's the full email that I was referring to before. The choice of Kamala Harris for VP is not a surprise. She is a historic, practical choice. Not only can she take on Pence, but I think she can address the three stooges behind the Orange Emperor, Miller, Bannon, and Barr. Colin says Kamala is, as VP, is a disappointment because it indicates that the Democrats are not committed to real progressive goals. If Biden and Harris win, it sets up for an ugly battle in 2024 between Harris and an actual progressive candidate.
Take it, Rosemary.
Well, you know, I think that there's something to this. We're in the midst, the whole country, and so certainly the Democratic Party is in the midst of two things. One is a move from center and right to left, which I think is important, and not everybody is together on that. The second is generational, and you see that with the AOC and the Cori Bush people who are winning now over old establishment Democrats. So that's a hard thing to navigate. I think the best politicians will be the old people who get with the program. And I see this in Pelosi, who has embraced AOC. I see it in Kamala Harris, who has been a leader along with Cory Booker in putting reform legislation in the Senate. Hasn't gone anywhere, but that's Mitch McConnell, who definitely is not with the program. But this is something that it's not a bad thing. It's kind of natural, and it's disruptive right now, but it's a natural evolution, and we're going to see this play out over the next, I would say at least 4 elections.
You know, I'm not so sure that I agree with you about Pelosi and AOC. I think you're right that there has been some outward acceptance of her presence. But on the other hand, I think there's been some signals, and I wish I could give them to you specifically, in which she says, no, that's enough now. We're not doing that. And,
Pelosi has definitely taken a stand that we need to work together, Alexandria.
Sure.
You need to learn from me. There's no sense having an experienced, wise old woman as your friend if you don't listen to her. But
yeah,
she's also picked up on that. Pelosi came out in support of the squad, the women who are running for re-election this year. Pelosi mm-hmm. supported them and campaigned for them. I think she has embraced them. I think she's not stupid, definitely not stupid,
right,
and sees that they are the future and that she must bring them along.
Well, they're some of the future anyway. I asked Mr. Morris, who's running against Richie Neal, whether he would vote for Pelosi. And his answer to me was, I'm in no position basically to say that now. I have to consider that. That sounds like a no to me. And maybe I'm wrong. But if that's where the squad is, it's not going to do them much good.
Let's go back to some letters here just for the couple minutes we have before a break at the bottom of the hour. Larry says, Kamala Harris is married to a Jewish man, and unfortunately that is enough for those in the cosmopolitan left who conflate their anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism to dismiss her as someone who could be an honest broker on Middle East issues, which
yeah,
is shameful.
Yeah, that's like my friend. Absolutely, yeah. That's my friend. Mm-hmm.
Derek says, how does Trump answer to donating $6,000 to Harris when she was running for California Attorney General?
He doesn't. He ran away from the question at his press conference.
But he's answered that, saying, I give money to politicians so they do what I want them to do.
I'll tell you what he'll do. He'll lie.
We have a lot of letters on this one that says it was Chris, not to put you on the spot, but what did you say about the Western? What was that statistic?
I said, and I hope I was right. Now I'm a little nervous about it. She is the first Democrat on a ticket from west of Colorado.
Yes. Okay.
And
that is true.
I believe it's correct.
Yes, we've been getting, I believe you're right, we've been getting a ton of letters saying that Nixon was from California, but not a Democrat, obviously. So that would be the...
Very obviously.
Right. Yes. I mean, there have been a lot of presidents, or at least 2 presidents from California,
correct,
but they're both Republicans. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Doug says, saying that Harris did poorly in the primaries is a Trump talking point. She dropped out before the voting began, recognizing she wasn't going to win instead of delusionally continuing. Think Kirsten Gillibrand, the writer says, stating she has no executive experience is untrue. As California Attorney General, she was executive above 11,000 employees.
That's worth mentioning. It'd be nice to have someone on the ticket who actually ran a state, but that's noteworthy. And, I think it'll come in handy when people make that point.
And we go to Laura, who says, I was not excited for the 2020 elections. I was upset in 2016 that I had to choose between Clinton and Trump. 4 years later, the best the Dems can come up with is Biden. Now that there is a woman VP, I feel better. I hope her pick energizes people to vote.
Well, that's one more vote that you didn't have before.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective as well.
Alan, what do you think that Biden has to do now to demonstrate that he's fully on board with Kamala Harris and that they're united? I mean, to demonstrate that, given the fact that they can't make public appearances before big crowds, how can he do that?
Well, people have to see chemistry, and they can always judge chemistry. I don't think it's policy. I think it's chemistry. How are they getting along? Are they smiling at each other? Are they, are they supportive of each other? I'm not a big believer. I think maybe Rosemary said it earlier. Somebody said it, that it's all policy. I don't think it's policy. I think it's character, and people relate to character. And that's what I think has to happen here. People have to have the sense that they like each other.
I think the story that has been moving quite a bit after the announcement was the friendship between Bo Biden and Kamala Harris.
Right, two state attorney generals.
Yes.
Yep.
So, and that had a lot because of their friendship, and of course the love of his son, that would be something that would bring the two together as well. I do want to move to the other issue. We've been talking a little bit about it, but not head on, which is that when we were talking about AOC and the squad, Ilhan Omar won the House primary in Minnesota, a member of the squad of progressive women of color elected to the House 2 years ago, topped a well-funded challenger in a victory for the left. I know there was some concern in this particular race, but she won, and she won by quite a comfortable margin. Alan?
Well, I don't know. She's had her troubles.
I think
she's learned a little bit. There were these accusations of anti-Semitism, which
right.
didn't go down well with a bunch of people. But I think that this is proof that there is a new generation of young people coming along, and that the voters find them attractive, particularly in that particular state and in that particular congressional district. So we'll see whether she continues down the straight and narrow road and whether she does what she needs to do to suggest that she has a progressive agenda, or whether she makes the same mistake she did with the anti-Semitism, which she had to apologize for.
Rosemary?
So the next...
Oh, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, so the next big progressive challenger to an incumbent is coming up in Massachusetts, right? Isn't that the Alex Morris-Richard Neal race? Won't that be kind of which I know has kind of gone off the rails a little bit, but that seems to be... You're seeing this kind of progressive energy. That seems to be one of the races that people will be watching to see if that continues.
Well, I don't know if Alex Morris is a progressive or if that Richie Neal isn't. After all, it's Richie Neal who wrote all the progressive legislation that put food on people's tables during this time as chair of the mm-hmm. Ways and Means Committee. There are those people who think of Morris as an opportunist. I don't know, but in politics, that's what always happens. I don't know that he's shown any great credentials as a progressive.
Off the rails, though.
Well, I know that the progressive left, the young progressive left, is solidly behind Morris. And,
yeah. What did you say, Rosemary?
I said
Chris's point about the election being off the rails is the main point here. Is it whether he's a progressive or whether he's a sexual predator among people, young people under his care?
Right. That debate will be on Monday. We'll see. It should be interesting.
We'll carry it, aren't we?
Yeah.
It should be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah. It's going to be quite.
What would you do if you were Richie Neal? You'd probably keep shut. I mean, why would you bring that up? Although,
is there polling in that primary?
Well, I know there's polling. I just don't know what's in it.
Right. I'm sorry. Is there any public polling?
I don't believe there's any public polling.
Hmm. Why did he think about this before he ran? Did he really think no one would find out about it? It always amazes me. Like, I think to run for office right now, you have to look at whether you were ever in blackface in a Halloween costume when you were a kid. You have to look at decisions made when you were in college about drugs, about where you stand on abortion. All these things will come out, and he didn't think about that. So it isn't just whether he was a sexual predator or not. It's his judgment. It's like,
well,
it's like
I think sexual predator. I think sexual predator is going.
That's not the allegation.
Predator is an accurate term. The from what I understand. The people he had relationships with were not his students. He was a lecturer there, but they were not under his. They were not his direct students. I mean,
that's
he's a young adult. They were young adults.
Well, we don't know.
No, we don't know.
If you're a professor, keep your hands off the kids. It's easy.
Also, Chris. I mean, I think the other issue here is that he, even as mayor and as a lecturer at UMass Amherst. He was attending functions up until recently attending functions of college Democrats and dating them.
Right. But remember that he's only 31 years old. So, I mean, if this happened 2 or 3 years ago, he's not necessarily that much older than the college Democrats that he's that he was having relationships with.
Good. Use the statutory race argument. Yeah, he was almost the same age, so it's okay. Come on.
No. If a college student is 22 years old and he's 27, that's not that big of a difference, Rosemary. It's not statutory rape. It's not that much of a difference.
But there's still the power dynamic.
Yes.
If he isn't her professor or his professor, you know what I mean?
But even if he's not,
and we don't know that. We just don't know that.
Right. We don't know that. There's a lot we don't know, and I suppose we'll hear about it during the debate.
I don't
think so. And the fact that we're arguing this as a point whether to vote for him or not against a guy who's been running impeachment and trying to uphold the power of Congress against Trump, that says something. I mean, why would you want to deal with him at this time? He just seems like a terrible candidate to me.
Well, in any case, he put himself forward. He has the right to do that, right? And, the thing that I object to here is that there is a nuance, although he admits that he's done wrong. And the college, by the way, Amherst, UMass, makes it clear that they don't like it and they're not going to rehire him again based on it. But the thing that bothers me.
Yeah, I mean, Rosemary, I think that since I don't know every particular, I don't want to offer a broad defense, but I think the reason people saw him as an attractive candidate is that he was a very young, gay, very progressive mayor of an old industrial working class city. And the fact that he kind of bridged those, exactly.
I
could kind of bridge those two groups, I think a lot of people found that really appealing in a candidate.
30 seconds,
right.
Go ahead.
That's right, but I got to tell you, the thing that really bothers me about his response was this is an anti-gay thing.
Right.
It wasn't. It was not. It had to do with what happens with students.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss. Great panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We will be back, and we still welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Just as we got off the air before the break, I said, and the letters on Morse and Neil will come in 3, 2... Here's one from Margarita, who says there was no statutory rape. These were college students, not kids. They were not, quote, in his care. He was a professor, not a guardian, foster parent, camp counselor, or health provider. This picture of a 31-year-old man is being painted as a lecherous old man who preyed on kids. Stop contributing to that misportrayal.
I don't think he was even a professor. He was a guest lecturer.
Yes, he was a guest lecturer.
No. He was an adjunct.
Yeah.
He wasn't a guest lecturer. Guest lecturer, Chris, is when I bring you into my class.
I'm reading a story about the Daily Gazette right now, which says he was a guest lecturer.
Yeah, I think he was a paid guest lecturer, was my understanding too, Alan.
It was my understanding he was teaching a course, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think I know what that means. Meaning that I don't know what that term guest like how that fits in the food chain.
If he was a guest lecturer, I'm a specialist in guest lecturers. I've had lots of them.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He still had power over students. You know.
No. But Rosemary,
if it isn't directly in grades, it's in recommendations. It's in talking to other faculty members. The power dynamic is still there. Professors should not have any sexual relationships with students.
Yes, but the point that's being made here is that he wasn't a professor, that he was a guest lecturer. Now, I know what a guest lecturer is, as do you. Somebody comes into your class and they...
Yeah, but they're not paid for by the university. They're not paid by the university.
The university issued a statement. They said they would not hire him again.
Right,
unquote.
Yeah.
Well, he has said up and down that he did not have sex with any student of his own. Right. He's been asked that directly and he says, no, I did not. So the power dynamic thing might not be the way it's being portrayed.
Oh, my goodness. I had a guest speaker come into one of my classes, and there were there were obvious advances being made that I did not approve of. I never had him again. I never brought him in. You do have a responsibility to protect students from that sort of thing.
Okay, so he is his position at UMass Amherst, he's a paid position at UMass Amherst, is lecturer. And that is according to their website. Not a guest lecturer, but a lecturer. And he did teach a course. So
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And lecturer, by the way, is a time-honored full-time job. It just means you're not on a tenure track.
Right. I mean, it's basically an adjunct, right? I mean, that's essentially what it is. Okay. All right. We have more letters on that. So let's get to them if I can actually get to them here. Hold on for a second.
Sorry to have derailed the show, Joe.
No, that's fine. We've been talking about this issue, and it's very interesting. And okay. Let's see. Ian Pickus, our news director, said he does not outright deny it in a WAMC interview. While you were teaching at UAmherst, did you have a relationship with a student at the college? And he said, I've been very clear about this. Everything I've done through my entire life has been a consensual relationship between two adults. I've been very clear that I have had personal relationships with students in the region that have been consensual over the years. And, you know, as someone that got into public office as a 21-year-old openly gay young person, I have always had to balance my personal life with my public life. And I will not apologize for being openly gay, for being a young person, and for going on consensual dates. And
well, I don't think anybody asked them to apologize for being openly gay. That's ridiculous. I mean, you know, we elect gay congressmen now. We do, and we should. We elect gay people.
Yeah, but he's not saying the distinction he's making here is that, yes, he may have had relationships, but they were consensual relationships.
Right. And just to be clear, he does concede that he had relationships with students. But when asked if he had relationships with his own students, students who are in his class, he said no.
Yeah.
So who cares if he's progressive? I would want to go with the guy who didn't have sex with any students.
Oh, Rosemary, you're the best. Whatever you think of Alex Morris, Richard Neal is not a progressive. For example, he never signed on to the Green New Deal, and he is well-funded by corporate pharmaceutical money. There is more, but that is just a couple of examples.
Here they come. But I'm telling you, Richie Neal has done more for this country with what he did as the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee and the two bills that the Democrats put forward, which he wrote. Don't tell me he's not a progressive, because he is. And there's some things I'll stand for, but that's not one of them.
All right. We have about 8 minutes, and I want to move on to some other stuff here. And we'll spend a few moments on what is going to happen as far as a jobless aid plan. White House is clarifying the limits of the plan as talks with Congress dim. President Trump's senior aides acknowledged yesterday that they are providing less financial assistance for the unemployed than the president initially advertised amid mounting blowback from state officials of both parties. On Saturday, Trump approved an executive action that he claimed would provide an additional $400 per week and an expanded unemployment benefit for Americans who have lost their jobs during the pandemic. By Tuesday, senior White House officials were saying publicly that the maneuver only guarantees an extra $300 per week for unemployed Americans, which, with states not required to add anything to their existing state benefit programs to qualify for the federal benefit. The clarification came as the odds of a bipartisan stimulus package grew increasingly dim, and state leaders clamored for the White House and Congress to approve legislation that would more directly address the expiration of unemployment benefits. This whole thing seems like a giant mess, and nobody seems to be working on it. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right.
You know what makes it? Yeah, absolutely. What makes it very sad to me is Steny Hoyer was in an interview yesterday on NPR, and he said that twice Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, had come to an agreement only to have Mark Meadows march in and cancel it. I mean, this was very close. It could have happened. And ideologies. Now, Meadows is the the Tea Party champion. The ideology got in there and interfered with it. And, you know, people are hurting and we're having ideological debates. It's pretty sad.
The other part of the story, of course, is the payroll tax. And this is now the cut payroll tax now opens up, as the New York Times reports, a Democratic line of attack because the taxes provide funding for Social Security, and Democrats have seized on the issue as they try to erode support for the president among older voters. But again, they can make that better, can't they, if they just go back to the table, which nobody seems willing to do at this point, right, Alan? I mean, I don't.
Yeah. I don't think anybody is willing to do it.
Rosemary?
Well, I just think this whole thing is another Trump going his own way, but without thinking it through, doing a hack, you know what, a kind of effort here. He wasn't even clear himself what he was signing in those executive orders, so there was all this mass confusion on top of just the horribleness of people not knowing how they're going to pay their bills, starting like right now. And so he comes out with these orders. He says, yeah, I'm going to take care of you. You'll only lose $200 a month. It's more than that. He upset governors. It's just the mess. It's the chaos that I object to as much as the policy differences. I also think it's a shame that he is winning his point that it's Democrats being recalcitrant about sitting down and trying to help people. I think, you know, Schumer and Pelosi are correct that the way to deal with this is to sit down and hammer out a long-term, multifaceted arrangement, which is not what Mark Meadows wants. And so captive in all this are the people who are hurting economically and are going to hurt more in the coming weeks, I fear.
And I still don't understand, and I'm trying to find out, and I think a lot of people fall into this category of just not being able to find details, maybe because there aren't any. But by Tuesday, senior White House officials, this is a line that I read earlier, senior White House officials were saying publicly that the maneuver only guarantees an extra $300 per week for unemployed Americans, with states not required to add anything to their existing state benefit programs to qualify for the federal benefit. So is that saying that it's $300 for everyone? Because before it was only going to be if the state signed up on it.
Yeah, no, well, they took that back, right? So they took back the idea that the states would have to pay.
But even if the states don't, they were saying I thought initially the concern was that the mechanism was not in place if the state didn't put the money in.
Well, no. The idea was we're lowering the amount we're going to put on everybody's table if the state wants to put the money. That was their saving face. If the state wants to put another $100 in, they can do it.
Yeah.
Right. But didn't the states also have to administer it?
Well, that's right.
Complicated.
Yes, yeah.
Right now, I don't know if that's still the case.
Well, that's what I don't understand. Because they were saying if the state would have to administer and do the actual work. Which is why the governors were coming out and saying it was so expensive, not only in the cost of giving the money, but also in the administration of it, that they would not be able to afford it. So now I'm trying to figure out, is this money then $300 going to everyone that was getting the $600, and is it federal?
Evidently, it's FEMA money. And it's federal, the $300. And originally, it was going to have $100 required from the state. But that, as you said, is no longer required. They backed off on that. And what's unclear here is how long that $300 would last and what's going to happen when we get hit with a even worse hurricane than the most previous one. And, you know, it seemed like a short-term feel-good solution. I'm going to order this. Trump would be a much better dictator than he is a democratically elected president. Wouldn't you say?
I don't know, Mike, because when he tries to do these orders, they don't work out that well. I mean, these authoritarian moves always seem to end in chaos and confusion.
That's because of the whole Constitution thing. We could fix that.
Is that the problem? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Get rid of that pesky thing, and we'll be all right. Yeah. All right. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank you all for being with us. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Always a pleasure. Mike Spain, you're a true pal. I thank you for taking my call and coming on the air in a moment's notice.
Anytime. At my pleasure.
Thanks to the entire Spain family for giving you up for 2 hours. Chris and Rosemary, thanks as always. We'll be back right after this.